Steve Noah of the Chicago Bulls, and you're listening to Chicago Bullseye.
Give it all you got, take your very best shot, and may the best team win. The time is now, the name of the game is action. They're on the floor and they're ready to score, so let the game begin. And let's see how the ball's gonna bounce today. Welcome to NBA.
Playoffs? NBA. College basketball historian Tim Gallagher joining the Bullseye again. Tim, it's a pleasure to have you back on. And a lot has happened since your last appearance on the show. The Cavs upset the Warriors for the NBA title. We had the draft. We're on the eve of free agency. We're going to talk about all three today. To start off the show, I'd like to get your thoughts on that series, that finals, great final series, LeBron's efforts, and where that stands in the history of great all-time efforts by a single player in the finals.
Right. Well, I know our last podcast that you and I had was right before Game 7, and we were pretty glowing in our reviews of LeBron up to that point, and that was before he took over Game 7, and I was thinking that he was probably deserving of MVP, even if they lost, kind of like last year. But obviously, coming back from 3-1, just like the Warriors did, and I know it's been more common to do that in the conference finals. Not common, but it's occurred more often. It's never occurred in the finals for a team to come back from 3-1. So, in that seventh game prediction where I said the Warriors by a hair, obviously didn't come true. But in terms of just the overall enjoyment of the finals and the games, was really something to see. And just a couple of general points overall, and just the interest in the finals. I mean, I found my wife, my mother-in-law, my mom, people that generally have a very limited interest in basketball, aware of what was going on, asking about Curry, asking about LeBron. So I think just from beyond the hardcore fans like us, it certainly grabbed the attention of a lot of fans that are more casual fans. So that was kind of interesting to see. A couple of observations just on the finals overall, though. I thought it was odd, though, that there were several blowout games, right? With so talented teams to have games just kind of just totally slip away from them in the finals. Obviously it all evened out at the end where with 2 minutes to go in game seven, it's 89-89. So, but just that there were some of those highs and lows on both sides leading up to that, I thought was a little odd. The other thing is, with LeBron, I compare it almost to, like we had talked about, he kind of was like, Magic Johnson, against the Sixers when Kareem got hurt back in 1980, right? Where he was just literally doing it all. And so I hope fans appreciate whatever you think of LeBron. I can't imagine anyone not appreciating his greatness and beyond the obvious things, but just the little things of, some of his left-hand finishes, the assists that he had, obviously some key block shots, and just his overall leadership. I mean, we're really seeing the whole package. So it's quite something to behold and enjoy.
And to lead the both teams in points, assists, rebounds, blocks, it's just incredible to comprehend that.
Right.
Go ahead, Tim.
Right, and it took every ounce of his amazing strength and talent to make it happen. But he did deliver, right? Ultimately, for Cleveland, the city of Cleveland, and anyone who's had an appreciation, and you don't have to go much farther than being a Chicago Cubs fan, right? To realize what a long drought and what that does to a fan base and a city, and so even though I wasn't necessarily cheering for Cleveland, it was pretty emotional and interesting to see that boulder was lifted off of their shoulders, and LeBron had a lot to do with it. A couple other thoughts on the finals. Kyrie Irving obviously was incredible, and was not far behind probably with MVP votes with what he was able to do in that series, and it obviously hit. It wasn't at the buzzer, but really the game winner was that three-pointer he hit late in the game that really when both teams had gotten flat and found it really hard to score, that really broke things open. And just his overall play and his ability to score on layups of all styles kind of remind me of Derrick Rose in his prime, maybe a Tony Parker. It's just what a great layup shooter. There's not many better than Kyrie. And then, the enigma Kevin Love in game seven, 14 rebounds and a plus 19 for his plus minus. So, I guess he kind of had the last laugh. He's got his championship ring. And although even his role and we've kind of just talked about, something just seems to be a little out of alignment or out of sync with Kevin Love in Cleveland. But as soon as that buzzer sounded, I think the first guy jumping into LeBron's arms was Kevin Love. So, I did feel good for him because, again, I followed him and seen him play since high school. And then the observation, too, of Tristan Thompson and, again, when the Warriors went quote-unquote small and Cleveland countered that with their small, but as we talked about in the last podcast, Cleveland's small is a lot bigger, especially when you got somebody like LeBron playing the four and a guy as agile as Tristan Thompson at the five. And what I'm saying that is on switchouts, there's Tristan Thompson out on the perimeter guarding Curry and staying with him, right, which was pretty impressive in terms of his agility. And
absolutely. Yep.
And then I haven't seen or heard anything on this, but I wonder if David Blatt is going to get a ring. I mean, he did coach the team, right, basically up until the All-Star break. And, the fact that I just wonder what happens in that case, right? It hasn't happened often where a coach was fired during the season of their team winning the championship. But I'm kind of saying that tongue-in-cheek, but I actually do genuinely wonder, are they going to acknowledge him or behind the scenes, at least, I think he deserves something for helping put that
together.
That's
a great
there.
Point. I wonder if that's ever happened where a coach has been fired, the team went on to win a title. I know it happened in college basketball in 1989. I think Steve Fisher went on, wasn't it during the season? The Michigan, he wasn't fired. I can't recall exactly the circumstances, but Michigan beat by the beloved Illini.
Yes, well, that was when Bill Frieder was the head coach, and he accepted the job at Arizona State, but was going to coach Michigan through the tournament, obviously not knowing they were going to win the whole thing. And Bo Schembechler was the athletic director and said, no, I want a Michigan man coaching Michigan. And even though Frieder had worked it out with Arizona State that I'll join the team once the tournament's over, I'll make the move, Schembechler wanted nothing to do with that and gave Steve Fisher the interim head coaching job for the tournament. It started in the tournament, and obviously Fisher, who's coaching here in San Diego State, took Michigan to the title. So, but back to the finals, too. The David Blatt thing, that'll be interesting to see if and how he gets acknowledged for his contribution there. And then with the Warriors, we've been saying all along, it don't mean a thing without the ring, right? The 73-9 and all of that. And
that's right.
And so I think it does mean something that they had such a great season and we're basically 2 minutes away from closing the deal, but ultimately they didn't do it. And just a couple of thoughts on that. And certainly the Bogut injury played an impact, right? Anytime you lose your starting center and Bogut probably did a lot of little things that I, as a very meticulous viewer of the games, may not have always appreciated, but his absence certainly didn't help, but obviously they were still right there. I think Green's suspension for that game hurt them more than Bogut being out the last couple games, but we can talk about that more another time. The other thing is Barnes and Livingston really didn't have an impact those last couple of games, which they obviously missed that. And in Game 7, Draymond Green's epic performance is pretty much going to be forgotten, right? 32 points, 15 rebounds, 9 assists. I mean, are you kidding me? In the seventh game of an NBA Finals, that's one of the all-time lines ever. But people aren't going to remember that just because they didn't close it out. And, and just those little things down the stretch that hurt them. Iguodala missed 2 free throws at one point late in the game. And then Curry, when he threw that kind of sloppy left-handed behind the back pass that was intended for Klay Thompson and went out of bounds. It's just, when the game is that tight and that crucial of a moment, my standards for Curry are so high that when he's having meltdowns like throwing his mouth guard or making a a mental mistake and throwing a high-risk pass like that at that point of the game, you know, that really surprises me just based on his level of excellence. But, you know, those things definitely hurt them. But the other final thing is, and I just reread this recently, you know, the Bulls were 7-1 against the Cavs and Raptors, right, the top two seeds in the East. And that's why I was saying late in the season, and I know you touched on it with Mark, where, gosh, if Rose could have just played in a couple of those games and maybe gotten into the playoffs, and I'm not saying the Bulls are getting to the finals or anything, but, you know, they obviously competed well during the regular season against the top two seeds in the East. And as we saw in the playoffs, no one expected OKC to make the run they did. So just get in the playoffs and see what happens. And that was kind of disappointing to me that the Bulls came up short to at least, hey, let's see what happens with some of these matchups, and you just never know. But, you know, that's just something we can regret and move on from.
Completely agree with you. Yep, completely
agree. The other final thought about Cleveland, and I was thinking about how the East was, you know, a relatively easy ride for them. I know Toronto won a couple of games, but I never felt like that series was in doubt. And the fact that Cleveland lost the first two games at Golden State, reflecting on that series now, it probably took them a couple of games to adjust to the level of competition, because they really cruised through the Eastern Conference, and then Golden State had their hands full and more with OKC. So I think Cleveland also had to adjust to the level of who they were playing against and the type of focus and effort that was going to be needed to not only compete but to win. So those are kind of my closing thoughts on the NBA Finals and the season that was certainly a memorable one.
Great stuff, Tim. I'd like to jump now to the draft and get your opinion on how the Bulls did. I mean, I'm ecstatic with the Denzel Valentine pick. I loved his game at Michigan State. I know people, you know, the knock on him is he's not ultra-athletic and he's not an A-plus defender, but I tell you what that guy does in the offensive end, he's an excellent passer. I saw him score a triple-double against top-notch competition like Kansas, and he played in one of the best leagues in college basketball. In the Big Ten, I just think he's a winner. Number one, he's just a fantastic player who improved every year, and I think he's the kind of guy that is going to really run Hoiberg's offense and do. If that's their objective, to get guys who are going to make, you know, their teammates better. That's what Valentine does. He can play multiple positions and guard multiple positions. I think he's underrated as a defender, and then athletically. You know, not an ultra, you know, that guy's going to jump out of the gym, but I don't think he's bad either. So let's get your opinion specifically on that pick. Some other teams that did well, some players that you might have really liked, and love to get your take on the draft overall.
Sure. Well, I was thrilled that Denzel was there for the Bulls. And you might recall when we were talking about the NCAA tournament, we talked about pro prospects on teams playing in the NCAA tournament, and Denzel Valentine was someone we spent some time with on that past podcast. Now, obviously, Michigan State had a very disappointing appearance in the tournament. They lost in the first round. They were upset by Middle Tennessee State, which was a huge upset. But throughout his body of work of his four-year career at Michigan State, Denzel Valentine won a ton of games, played in a Final Four his junior year. He was Big Ten Player of the Year. He was National Player of the Year in a couple of different services, you know, National Association of Basketball Coaches, Associated Press. I mean, player of the year for college basketball. So,
right.
And the other thing that jumped off the page for me about him is he averaged 7.8 assists a game. So almost 8 assists a game at Michigan State. And so that tells me he's a playmaker and understands the game and has court vision and has some versatility. And, you know, someone that had very similar accolades at Michigan State but was still sort of under the radar was Draymond Green. You know, he was Big Ten Player of the Year and Player of the
Great
Year
point.
Of a couple. And, you know, no one really thought much of him. And I'm not saying Denzel Valentine's the next Draymond Green, but I think there's a lot of commonalities there. And, you know, when you think of other similar players that Michigan State has put into the NBA under Izzo, and, you know, kind of the lower end of the scale, is a very serviceable role player in the league. Alan Anderson, you know, you might remember from Toronto. I think he's on the Nets now. He's kind of bounced around a little bit, but been a very solid player in the league. And I think Denzel Valentine is a, you know, definitely, you know, a much more talented player than Allen Anderson. You know, there's players like Morris Peterson that had very solid NBA careers that, you know, of a similar size. Peterson was probably more of a pure shooter, but, you know, so somewhere in that range, you know, kind of on the Allen Anderson up, all the way up to a Draymond Green. So somewhere in there, I think we'll get a nice contribution from Denzel Valentine. Plus, as we've talked about in podcasts before, for players coming right into the league and on teams that have aspirations to get in the playoffs and win some in the playoffs, some of these one-and-done guys, you know, are a long, long way from contributing. And you know, we talked about the Final Four teams that made it in the NBA playoffs this year and how few players were even second and third year players in the league, right? Everyone's been in the league for a while. It's playing significant minutes and leading teams in the playoffs. So, and that's because a lot of these higher picks are these, you know, one and dones or players that are still work in progress. So, I'm expecting Denzel Valentine to get significant minutes, you know, right out of the gate for the Bulls. And they're going to need him to do that as well. So, and just some other current players in the league that I compare him to, and a few names that we can talk about in our free agent conversation are Courtney Lee or a Jared Dudley. I could see him similar to those kind of players. And I think even a notch above them in terms of being a playmaker and that almost 8 assists a game number is what makes me think of that. So, and plus, I just think from an aesthetic standpoint, Denzel Valentine just seems like the right kind of guy for the Bulls in the city of Chicago, right? A Big Ten guy, a Midwestern guy, you know, kind of a tough, athletic guy. So I just like the pick for all those reasons.
How about some of the other guys in the draft that you liked and what teams they went to? Any teams that really you saw hit a homer with their picks and specific players that you really liked?
Yes. Well, two players in the top five that I personally think went too high. First was Jaylen Brown going to the Celtics. So out of Cal, you know, so he's a one and done, 1 year of college, and you know, an incredible athlete, but I just think a long way from being ready to step into an NBA game and make a contribution. And having him go third, I didn't even see him that high on any mock drafts either. The other is, you know, I've just not been as high on Chris Dunn as a lot of people, the point guard from Providence. Now, I know Tibbs has him in Minnesota, and so maybe this is his new rose that's going to lead his team. Although I think Dunn's skill set reminds me a little more like of a Rondo, where his length and athleticism, but not really a pure shooter or a scorer. You know, I think that part of his game needs some work. But he's got some length and athleticism and is known as a defensive player. So I think Tibbs will certainly be able to shape him and you know, certainly had a lot of influence on that pick. You know, the guy that I think might be the top talent in this draft and is still, you know, a little ways down the road because he's just 18 years old is Marquise Chriss out of the University of Washington. So he was drafted by Sacramento but going to the Suns. But I'm saying in 3 to 5 years, that's going to be the guy that, you know, could be the top talent that came out of this draft. Another pick that surprised me was
Marquise Chriss, because I did hear an interview with the Suns GM. They had two picks, obviously, in the top eight.
Yep.
A little bit about his game. What is he like? I'm curious to hear your opinion about him. What makes him – well, why do you think he's going to be really a difference maker in the future?
Yeah, well, watching him play, it reminds me of Paul George, just in terms of his skill set and his style. But his athleticism is off the charts. I mean, if you go YouTube him and look at some athletic plays and dunks on fast breaks and follow-ups, you know, so his athleticism is just off the charts. And I think there's some basketball skills that go with it that once he matures a little bit, you know, you blend – that talent level with just, he's only 18 years old, right? So he's going to need a couple of years just to get a little stronger and acclimate to the speed of the NBA game. But I think talent-wise and potential-wise, he's at the top of my list. And again, yeah, Paul George is play-alike in terms of a possible ceiling for him. The other pick I was a little surprised by was Thon Maker going to the Bucks at number 10. But, you know, I know the Bucks have been trying to build around these long athletic guys like the Greek Freak and John Henson and players, you know, Michael Carter Williams is kind of that kind of a player. So, but, you know, very inexperienced, you know, he could have gone to college this year. He went to a prep school, but yeah, he fulfilled the requirement to be eligible for the draft. But I think he's got some work to do to get into an NBA game and make any kind of contribution. Another pick that I really liked was Sabonis, Domantas Sabonis from Gonzaga. He was drafted by Orlando, but then traded to OKC. So, you know, I've seen Sabonis in person, watched him pretty closely. He's the son of course, legendary Hall of Famer Arvydas Sabonis, and just love the passion that he plays with. And you know, and a couple of those moves I think that OKC made with some acquisitions to bolster their roster a bit, getting Oladipo, getting Ilyasova, and Sabonis. and basically losing Ibaka, which I guess they must have felt like they'd, you know, they'd run their course with Ibaka, even though I thought he still played pretty solidly. But it looks like on that front line, with the jump that Adams and Cantor made, they felt like they could make a move with him. You know, the other thought, at number 20, remember we had Grant Goodstein on, and we'll have Grant again, the basketball analytics friend of ours, and was a student manager at Michigan. He predicted that despite the injuries, Caris LeVert would go pretty high in the draft, and sure enough, he went to number 20 with Brooklyn. Pacers drafted him, traded him to Brooklyn, so that was a little bit of a surprise. And then right at the end of the first round, the Spurs took DeJounte Murray, another player out of University of Washington, who, so again, I think he's a high lottery talent, but he's only 19 years old, and again, he's kind of like his teammate in college, Marquise Chriss. I think he's got some work to do to be able to get into a game and make something happen. But I'm guessing with the Spurs' shrewd eye for talent and their player development, you know, Chip Anglin, the shooting guru, I'm sure they saw some things in him that they felt like they could develop him. And, you know, again, a lottery type talent that, you know, if he stayed in college another year or two, there's no way he'd be somewhere where the Spurs would be picking. So I think they're speculating a little bit, but I think that's an interesting pick to keep an eye on. A couple of the picks that I liked, kind of 6 through 8, I mentioned Marquise Chriss already. You know, I like Jamal Murray at Denver. We talked about him as well around our NCAA tournament discussions about NBA prospects that were playing in the NCAA tournament. And then Buddy Hield at New Orleans, that seemed like about the right spot for him to go in the draft. And I think that's a good team for him with, you know, Anthony Davis drawing a lot of the attention. You know, that should create some space for Buddy, and who's a, you know, probably the best outside shooter in this draft.
Great stuff. Great stuff, Tim, on the draft, covering the draft. Now I'd like to go into the discussion on the free agents. We're on the eve of the big day. And I want to throw some names out at you for the big free agent names, and like to hear if you think, you know, if they're going to stay with the current team or if you think they're going to, you know, maybe sign somewhere else and we're a good fit maybe potentially there. So let's start out with the biggest name in the draft, which, of course, is Kevin Durant. I mean, in the
right.
Free agent, obviously, sweepstakes, Kevin Durant.
Right. And as we speculate, some of these players probably don't even know. You know, they haven't decided yet. Yeah, I think with the way Oklahoma City played against Golden State in the playoffs, a couple of these recent transactions that I just touched on with the draft and then the players they picked up from Orlando, you know, it looks like they're still building pieces to make that final step to get to the finals and win a championship. And of course, with Westbrook there, I just don't know other than Golden State or San Antonio where Durant could go and have a better chance of getting to the finals and winning. So my intuition is he'll stay and wait and see what Westbrook does. I don't think he'll sign something long-term with OKC. I think he'll align with Westbrook's contract coming up at the end of next year and seeing where they go. So my intuition is he's going to stay.
How about DeMar DeRozan?
Well, that's an interesting one. You know, out here on the West Coast, and he's a L.A. native, and I saw him play in high school as well. There's talk about the Lakers making a run at him. But, you know, we won't go into all the nuances of the contracts and the teams that, you know, that these guys have been playing on can go a fifth year and the financial aspect of it. So I'm looking at more of, is it a right fit for the player from either a, you know, where they grew up or a chance to win type standpoint, and not really getting into the dollars aspect of this, which, you know, certainly is a component of it too. But I think with Lowry there, it's kind of most like the same thing with Durant, but a poor man's version of it with Durant and Westbrook is Lowry and DeRozan kind of have a similar thing going. But I'd say if he's going to go anywhere, he may come out to L.A., come back home, and as the Lakers try to rebuild and get things going with Luke Walton, that might be a good destination for him.
Great. How about, let me see some of the other names here I want to go over with you.
Well, we talked about Mike.
Al Horford. Let's go with Al Horford.
Yeah, that's an interesting one, and I'm a huge fan of Al Horford. And, you know, and it looks like Atlanta's kind of plateaued in terms of, you know, getting to a deeper run in the playoffs than they have had the last couple of years. But he seems like a perfect guy that would be a great professional influence on a team with some young players, like a Los Angeles, right, where you've got this core of young guys like D'Angelo Russell and Julius Randle and now Brandon Ingram's there, where you need a pros pro to really show you how to handle things, handle your business on and off the court, professionalism, preparation, all of it, you know, that, you know, he would be a good fit for something like that. You know, with the Hawks, it's hard to say what, you know, where they're headed since they have sort of plateaued. And you know, that's a tough one with him.
How about Mike Conley?
Well, that's an interesting one because my one concern about him is he's so small. Right, even though he's very talented, but I just think to get to a championship level, you need a point guard with a little more size than him. But you know, his leadership and talent and improvement throughout his career, I never thought he'd be this good of a pro, and I thought he'd be a good player. And I watched him at Ohio State his 1 year there, and saw him even play in the McDonald's All-American game, which was in San Diego, his senior year of high school, and that was Durant's senior year. The Lopez twins. Chase Buttinger, a lot of good players in that class. Greg Oden at the time was probably the top guy in that class, which obviously things didn't pan out as a pro for him. So, you know, I know there's some discussion we've had even about the Bulls finding a point guard like Mike Conley, and I would see that as a really good fit with the pieces that the Bulls have, and then you've got a steady backup like a Calderon, and Calderon could be the starter too.
I that guy plays D too. I mean, you remember when you and I were at that game in Thibodeau's last year, I think it was in March, and we were like 10 rows up, and we just saw at the end of that game how he just locked down defensively, and he is such a excellent defender at the point guard position and would be such an upgrade over what we've had over the past few years. I'd love to see that kid on the Bulls, and I know he's still, though, 28, right? 28 or so. He's still on the right side at 30. I'd love to see that. And he seems like a pro's pro, so I'd love to see that guy part of the organization. How about Nick Batum?
Well, yeah, Nick Batum is kind of in that same bundle with guys like Courtney Lee and Jared Dudley. I think Batum and is probably a step up. I put Kent Bazemore in that group as well, where you got these guys that are, you know, kind of two threes, that are kind of versatile and, you know, established pros. You know, they've played in some winning situations. So, you know, those guys are all kind of in the mix there. I'm thinking that because Charlotte has, you know, made such an improvement last year, and they weren't even totally healthy throughout last season, that, you know, the fact that they made a pretty nice jump in the standings, got into the playoffs, and they struggled against Miami in the playoffs, but it looks like they're on a real positive trajectory there, in my view, with some young players. So I'm thinking for that reason that someone like Batum may stick with that. That you know, And I don't think their improvement, it wasn't just a coincidence that he was there. I think he had a lot to do with it in terms of what he brought to the team. But he would be a great addition to a lot of teams and, you know, kind of has been underappreciated through much of his career. You know, at Portland, where he was a little bit under the radar, and then, again, getting to Charlotte and then making a nice little jump in the standings.
How about Dwight Howard?
Gosh, I wouldn't want to be the GM that signs him to a contract. He's another one of those guys. You know, we've talked about this in past podcasts, but I'm just not a huge fan of Dwight Howard, of DeAndre Jordan. I just don't think they're championship centers. And maybe I'm being a little harsh, but I think for what you'd have to pay Dwight Howard, for one, and what your return on that investment would be is not going to be you're not going to get the payoff. You know, the interesting thing, though, is the coach at Houston now is Mike D'Antoni. And if memory serves me correctly, when the Lakers had their ill-fated attempt at building a super team with Kobe, Steve Nash, and Dwight Howard, I believe the coach of that team was D'Antoni, and I don't think he and
Dwight right.
were the best of friends there. So I'm with that in mind. I'm thinking he does make a move from Houston, but I'm not sure where. It would be an interesting circumstance and coaching staff, and you know he and Kobe didn't really see eye to eye when he was in L.A. and you know, and that was where the Lakers really took their dip to not being a contender. So I just think there's a lot of baggage with Dwight Howard that would be tough for someone to take on, especially at the price tag he's going to command.
How about Hassan Whiteside?
You know, that's an interesting one. He's, you know, so his career has had such an interesting trajectory, right, where he was, you know, basically waived out of the league and, you know, couldn't get anybody to even sign him, and now he's in demand. I would guess if Miami wants him, Pat Riley will be pretty persuasive in terms of keeping him there, and obviously his leap in his success in his career happened in Miami. So, you know, the fact that they gave him a chance and there must have been some player development there to get him to the level that he was playing. So, although he's kind of an interesting guy just because of his journey, right? It's been kind of a funky trip for him in terms of fledgling through, you know, 3 or 4 years and getting established in the league. So, I know the Lakers have been talking about getting him, but I think for him, and because you know, he's got a reputation of being a little bit of a head case, that you need a team with some solid veterans, like in Miami where you had a Lou Alding and, of course, Dwayne Wade and players like that that were not only you know keeping him accountable but obviously backing up what the front office had in mind for him too.
I have time for two more. Bismack Biyombo. Like to hear your 411 on him, and then to wrap it up, let's go with Harrison Barnes, who I think is a restricted free agent, but unlikely the Golden State will be able to sign him.
Right, I think Barnes will stay at Golden State.
Really?
Well, unless something happens where they're able to somehow pull a rabbit out of the hat and sign Durant, but I think because they've invested in him and have developed him. You know, it looks like Jerry West has taken a personal interest in him. Now, I don't know how much out of favor he's fallen because of his mediocre performance in the finals, but the Warriors seem like a culture that, you know, he played pretty well over the course of the season. Now, again, in the playoffs, he disappeared, but I think his talent and versatility, and Iguodala is a player kind of like Harrison Barnes, and he's getting a little late in his career. So I think the Warriors are also looking at the future because Harrison Barnes is such a young guy that they may want to keep him in place for that as well. So I guess I don't think other teams, because of his inconsistent play in the playoffs and in the finals in particular, are going to be lined enough to give him a max contract based on that. That's my hunch.
How about Biyombo?
Well, you know, I it seems like they have a good thing going there at Toronto. And when he got his opportunity to play when Valanciunas went down, he that was the best he's played in his whole career. And I don't know how replaceable he is based on his energy and rebounding. You know, again, that's another guy though that his skill set is somewhat limited, right? He can do a couple of things, but he's lacking in some other things. So again, if I'm looking to find free agents, I'm looking for someone that's not just a one or two trick pony, right? I want someone that can do a lot of things if I'm paying that kind of money. And, you know, almost like a Kenneth Faried, right? Where Kenneth Faried's great in terms of energy and in transition for the Nuggets, but, you know, but in a half court offense, he really can't do much, right? He can't shoot the ball. So I see Biombo as one of those kind of guys. He's got a unique skill set, but, you know, I don't think he's a guy that is a max contract guy. I'm even on the fence of if DeMar DeRozan is a max contract guy, and he's a pretty versatile talent, right? He's a couple-time All-Star. So that's where the max contract and guys' talent levels are, you know, it's kind of a funky thing. But I'm going to say Biombo stays in Toronto, and, you know, they've kept Dwayne Casey, and they're going to try to keep their core and see if they can make another run at it since, you know, they played Cleveland, you know, in the East as, you know, relatively well.
You know, big picture to me, unless you're talking about Durant, I mean, there's not a lot of free agents in this class that I just really moved the needle for me. And I know 2017 is much better. I'd prefer almost to the Bulls to be conservative right now. And unless you can get Conley after that, you know, Durant's probably not realistic. I prefer that they just, you know, instead of over-signing and overpaying a guy like Barnes, you know, stay as it is and move on to next year. What say you?
Yeah, well, if they were going to go for someone like Barnes, I would almost go for someone like a Kent Bazemore. Right, someone like that, right? Where
Kent Bazemore is going to probably demand, I think, 14. I've been reading he's going to get anywhere between 14 and 16 million per year, and I don't know. Kent Bazemore doesn't move the needle for me. He just doesn't. And signing overpay, I think that's way. I know I might be living on, you know, last year's salary cap, and I need to kind of get, you know, higher expectations of what people are going to get paid, but. Signing him to a long-term deal, is it really going to make the Bulls that much better? I don't think so. I mean, obviously we'd be better, but I'd almost prefer to have the flexibility next year when there are far more premier free agents than this year.
Right. Yeah, I'm just thinking of a guy like him to help the Bulls get a little more athletic. You know, we saw a little bit of it from Holiday late in the season, and, of course, he was part of the trade. But so yeah, that's what I'm thinking, is someone that's maybe a little more of an athlete, but real quickly, Fred, so give me your thoughts on with Noah and Gasol. I mean, pretty much presuming they're gone, right?
Sure. I mean, you've been hearing the word out in the street is that potentially somebody's going to give Noah a max deal, and that's just insane to me. I mean, I love the kid. He was a great kid, but to me, his career is clearly in decline. He's clearly, I think it's almost over based on his offensive statistics over the past few years. He just can't play in the NBA shooting as a big man under 40% and shooting from the free throw line so poorly. I hope he turns it around. I think it's great if he goes to the Knicks, but I think it's time we said goodbye here in Chicago. And Gasol, to me, is arguably the most underappreciated player ever came through here. He made two All-Star teams, and I've never seen a fan base so excited to see a guy go. I understand his deficiencies on the defensive end, but he'll go somewhere and win probably – be a winner again, because he's been a winner everywhere he's gone in his career for the most part when he's played well. And I thought he played excellent for the Bulls on the offensive end, and obviously some deficiencies defensively, but took a lot of the blame, and I'd say 95% of the fan base is happy he's gone. To me, he was a big hole on the offensive end, and it's just not going to be filled. You know, you're not going to find anybody to fill it. What's
right.
You?
Well, right. Well, and I think they're both gone as well, and you and I haven't done a podcast since the Rose trade, and obviously you and Mark covered that in depth, but I was thrilled to see that the Bulls got such assets in exchange for Rose. I really like the trade. I'm thrilled with it, actually. So,
Great point. I'd like to get your opinion on that. I mean, what do you think about Derek and his few comments from you on his career here and, you know, how he's going to be in New York.
Well, you know, the thing is, it was a graceful way for Rose to exit Chicago, right? So, you know, there's a lot of emotion tied to it, being a local hometown player, former MVP. But, you know, as you talked about, we've talked about, we've observed, he's just not the same player that he once was. And that, and so what's going to be a tactful way to get him off the Bulls roster, right? And so they were able to trade him and get assets like Lopez, Grant, and Calderon. I remember thinking it was the day of the Cavs parade. I almost was thinking that was worthy of a small parade in Chicago, that they were able to get that kind of value for him. And I don't wish any ill will on Derek, and you know, he had some great, great seasons with the Bulls. But I think as we saw last year, the torch kind of was passed to Jimmy, or either Jimmy took it or it just evolved that way naturally. And I think, I know there were a lot of health issues with Rose, but just his productivity wasn't there. And so the fact that they were able to move him and get strong assets, in my view, I think three very, very serviceable, and I don't say serviceable lightly, I mean, three players that, and I think Grant's got some upside that can play. So I thought it was fantastic from the Bulls' point of view.
Amen, Jim.
And I think the Knicks are kind of a mess. So, if Derek can somehow work through that situation and whatever Phil's trying to put together there, now there's a new coach. And, you know, obviously Porzingis and Anthony are talents, but beyond that, you know, I'm just not sure what they're really doing there. So, I wish him well for the Knicks, except when it impacts how the Bulls are doing in the standings.
Amen, Tim. Hey, man, thanks again for joining the Bulls. I appreciate all your comments today and all your input and your vast array of knowledge. Just great to talk to you as usual, and enjoy the craziness of the free agency period. We'll have you on again soon to discuss the ensuing results.
Yes, and I'm headed to Vegas to see a little summer league action the first weekend of the NBA Summer League, and plan to see the Bulls there. So we'll definitely talk after that. I'll give you a full report of who I see and how things are looking there.
Man, I would love to hear that. Looking forward to it. All right, my man. Talk to you soon, Tim.
All right, Fred. Always a pleasure.
Have a good one, bud. Bye-bye.